On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. And this morning, we're going to have a conversation about dieting and particularly the role of protein in a healthy diet. Some of the most popular diet approaches emphasize protein in favor of carbohydrates and just about everything else. But certain researchers are concerned that many Americans are eating much more protein than they actually need. But how much is too much? And how much is enough? Well, I have no idea, but I know someone who does, and conveniently, she's here with me in the studio. Monica Reinagle is the Nutrition Diva. She's a licensed nutritionist from Baltimore and the creator of the Nutrition Diva podcast. She's written 6 books, the latest of which is called Nutrition Diva's Secrets for a Healthy Diet. She's a regular contributor to Maryland Morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Tom.
So diets that emphasize protein really are all the rage, and they have been for quite some time. You know, the Atkins diet, the paleo diet, you know, eating like a cave person. Let's start by describing what those diets generally recommend. What's the approach?
Well, you're right. Protein is sort of the nutrient of the year. That's where we're putting all our eggs in that basket. And a lot of dietary approaches counsel people to up their protein intake. But the thing is not just to eat more protein, but to eat protein instead of other foods so that you're getting a greater percentage of your calories from protein, therefore a lower percentage of your calories from carbohydrates and fats. And they argue that this has several benefits for you. I think one of the things that people notice most when they shift to a higher protein diet is that it does a better job regulating your appetite. People on high protein diets aren't as hungry, and that makes it easier for them to monitor their calorie intake.
If you were on, for example, an all veggie diet or something like that, or you know, so you just, I mean, I know a lot of folks say it's a better idea, for example, to eat 6 small meals a day instead of 3. I mean, is it that kind of thing?
Well, no, it's protein is just digested differently, mm-hmm. and it just has different effects on the appetite control hormones, and so this is a pretty demonstrable effect that when you eat more protein, you're not as hungry. Low-fat diets are kind of notorious for leaving people hungry. You have a low-fat meal, and after just an hour, hour and a half, you're hungry again. So this is sort of the flip side of that. But it's ironic that high-protein diets are such a big deal right now because we were, even before we got on this high-protein kick, most Americans were already getting 1.5 to twice the amount of protein that they actually need. So this is actually experimenting with saying, okay, what happens if we get more protein than we need? You know, are there any advantages to that? But again, it's built on the assumption that you're eating more protein and then less of other things. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to get perhaps some effects from both sides of that equation.
Now, is one of the attractions of this also that it appears to be, and certainly this is my little anecdotal evidence of friends that I know who've been on these high-protein diets, that the weight comes off. They're trying to lose weight quickly, and it does come off fairly quickly. If they all of a sudden no bread, no pasta, boom, you know, they're losing pounds more dramatically than they would had they done like a low-fat diet or something, which tends to take a little longer.
Right. I think what you're describing is mostly the effects of a dramatic reduction in carbohydrates. So that's what tends to trigger that fast initial weight loss. It's sometimes kind of hard to sustain that. And a lot of that is water weight. When you reduce carbohydrates and you eat more protein, high-protein diets can be a little dehydrating. And so when you're shedding a lot of water, especially at the beginning of a diet, yeah, those pounds just feel like they're rolling right off. And that can be very encouraging for people. The trick is, how long can you keep it up? And you know, what right. happens after things stabilize?
Right. So you mentioned that a lot of folks are, and most folks are having, are actually consuming, you know, almost twice as much protein as they need. Does the research agree on how much is in fact needed? And is there a different need for levels of protein at different times of life, you know, for a 20-year-old or a 60-year-old or an 80-year-old?
Well, the range, the recommended range of protein is actually really wide. I can't think of many other nutrients where it's okay to get anywhere between 10% of your calories and 35% of your calories from protein. That's what the Institute of Medicine says. So that's a huge
range. Yeah, it's a big range.
Right? Now, 10% is kind of the bare bones minimum, 10% of your calories. So for guys, that's usually going to be about 60 grams of protein. For women, maybe 50. For kids and older adults, maybe more like 30, 35. That's that sort of rock bottom minimum. And that's the amount of calories that we need to get from protein in order to just keep up with biological functions. But after protein has served all those functions, it can also just be a source of energy. you know, above and beyond that. And that's where the high protein diets, you know, they're tapping into protein not just as a building block of, you know, for amino acids, a pool of amino acids, but as an alternate source of energy. And that may have some advantages. And I think you also asked, like, do needs change? Well, your body size makes a big difference in how much protein you need. Also, how fast you're growing. So kids proportionately need more protein. And how much muscle mass. If you're an athlete or you lift weights or you've got, you know, a big lean muscle quotient in your body, then you're going to need more protein to sustain that, because that's one of those things that protein does, is keeps our muscles intact.
Monica Reinagle is the nutrition diva on 88.1 It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So let's talk about the sources of protein that are available. Where are the most common places that folks are getting their protein intake?
Well, here in the Western world, we think of protein as meat, as animal protein. So that would be, you know, chicken and steak and pork and fish and also eggs and to a slightly lesser degree, dairy products. Animal products tend to be the most concentrated sources of protein, and they're also the most bioavailable and biousable. They're more complete. So they're sort of the highest quality protein. But a lot of people don't want to eat animal products, and that's okay, because we can also get protein from plant foods, grains. People are surprised how much protein whole wheat has. It's about 10% of calories are from protein. Beans and legumes, some protein in nuts and seeds. If you're eating a completely vegetarian or even a vegan diet, so no eggs, no milk, as long as you're getting enough calories, you're going to get enough protein. You're going to get that 10% that you need just to cover your bases.
Mm-hmm. So if you are doing more than covering your bases, mm-hmm. if you're getting more than 10%, there have been some really conflicting and confusing reports of studies about this, about whether too much is really harmful for you or, you know, completely neutral or not harmful at all. Sometime in early March, the journal Cell Metabolism published a study that said for middle-aged people who do eat a lot of meat and milk and cheese, they could be risking early death because of the high protein intake. And then a few weeks later, there was a firestorm of people coming out against that study, saying it was flawed. And can you describe what they were trying to study, what they came up with, and sort of what we know and what we don't know? I mean, I'm sounding like Donald Rumsfeld here, but what's the known unknowns about this issue?
Yeah, that study really did get a lot of people's attention and got a lot of press. And it basically found that for people in the middle of their lives who were eating the most animal proteins, that they had a sharply increased risk of death from cancer and from other causes. Okay, so that sounds pretty scary. But with these studies, you know, they're looking at correlations. There's a big unknown in those, because we don't know what else was going on with those people in that group who were eating all of that animal protein. Were those people that were eating the most meat, were they also consuming more alcohol? Were they consuming fewer fruits and vegetables because their plate was full of meat? You know, were they exercising less? Or was it not just that they were eating more animal protein, but they were actually eating more of everything? And what we're seeing here are the wages of overweight and obesity. Those are always really tricky to answer when you're looking at this sort of epidemiological data. And researchers try to control as much as they can for all those variables, but they can never control for everything. And although I think that this finding, you know, was sort of sensational and got a lot of press, there's a lot of other findings that aren't consistent with this, and that leads me to believe that the amount of animal protein in the diet may not have been the most salient feature in those in that population that was experiencing that early death. In fact, right around the same time that that study came out, a pair of studies came out looking at animal protein specifically in seniors, and finding that...
Right, and they found that it was a very good thing, particularly for
yes.
men. They found that, you know, it could really diminish their susceptibility to, you know, cognitive disability and physical disability.
It was almost the complete opposite of this finding. This is a study that came out of Japan, the one that you just mentioned, and it found that the men who were eating the most animal protein, so that's kind of analogous to, you know, the group in the study that had the higher risk of death, but in this study, the men who were eating the most animal protein had the least physical and cognitive decline compared to those who were eating the least animal protein. So that certainly suggests that there's more to this story than just, you know, that animal protein is a killer.
And, of course, a diminishment of cognitive or, you know, less cognitive decline, less physical decline is not mortality. necessarily, right?
So that's true.
I mean, it could be that they're still maybe dying younger than they might have, but they felt better when they died. I mean, because those are two separate things, aren't they?
Yes, and I think there's something else that we should point out here, and that is that although people in midlife are generally getting far more protein than they need, people over 65 are much more likely not to be getting enough. They're the one group, especially women, older women, they're the one group who on average are the most at risk of protein deficiency. And it's kind of the worst time in your life not to be getting enough protein. Well, obviously for babies and children, it's very important for growth. But
so
as
why
adults,
is that? Why are seniors not getting enough protein in many instances?
I think there's a lot of reasons. You know, sometimes they're just eating less meat, which, as I just said, you know, this is the most concentrated source of protein. And sometimes people aren't cooking anymore, and so they're more likely to be eating a can of soup or crackers and cheese maybe for dinner, or even a bowl of cereal, you know, and milk. And those foods have some protein, but it's just not adding up to enough. I think people, seniors, often eat less meat because they have trouble with their teeth or their dentures, or they may just be eating less overall because they have a reduced appetite. And as their calorie intake sinks, their protein intake in particular seems to sink dangerously low. And this can really lead to a lot, you know, in women, especially when we're not getting enough protein, we start to lose muscle mass, right? Sarcopenia, which is a big thing. And when you start to lose muscle mass as an older person, then you start to lose bone mass. And the whole thing starts spiraling downward into frailty and disability. So this is just one group that I think that we could target with our message to say, you know, like, make sure you're getting enough protein to balance out this message, you know, that's getting a lot of press about, you know, the dangers of protein. And really the fastest way to meet your protein needs, if you don't have any objection to eating animal protein, that'll get you there the fastest.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things it seems that the researchers are doing is that they're less and less inclined to treat adulthood as one single thing. Right, they're parsing it a little bit more. I mean, some of these new studies are really talking about the difference between a senior, you know, a person in her 70s or 80s, as opposed to a midlife person in 40s or 50s. And certainly, you know, those needs are going to be a bit different than the young person in her early 20s.
That's a great point. And you know, the current dietary guidelines really just do look at seniors as adults who need fewer calories. And so, as the calories scale down, they've just scaled protein down proportionately when they're making their recommendations. And that turns out to be a big mistake, because although our calorie needs go down, our protein needs don't. And that means that protein has to be a bigger and bigger percentage of our calories if we're going to hold steady there. So yes, treating the 65 and older population as a unique group with unique needs from the nutritional perspective, from drug dosages, you know, from everything, I think is a really important and valuable development.
All right. Great stuff to know, Monica. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
Bye, Tom.
Monica Reinagle is the Nutrition Diva. She's written 6 books, the latest of which is called Nutrition Diva's Secrets for a Healthy Diet. She's a regular contributor here on Maryland Morning, and she is the progenitor, the proprietor, the author of the Nutrition Diva podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. So glad you've been with us. Have a great weekend.
Maryland Morning is an original production of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore.
The program is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. I'm Tom Hall. I'm the culture editor.
We have production help from Brandon Block, Alexandra Kennedy, and Justina Latimer. Coffee provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville on the web at zekescoffee.com.
You can find us online at WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. You can leave a comment about something you've heard or make a suggestion about an interview you think you should hear on our show.
On 88.1 WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. The whole Maryland Morning team is glad you're listening. Have a great weekend.